All right, welcome back. I hope everybody had a nice, enjoyable, beautiful weather weekend. You know, relaxing Shabbat, hopefully. But we're back. We have a full week of Olivet ahead of us. For those that were not able to make it on Thursday, so let me just give you a quick recap as far as, I'm just muting everybody. There you go. As far as one of the most important points that we touched upon is the fact that the name of the letter, the second letter, is called Beit. Beit. Beit is also a word for the house, right? And we spoke a little bit about that concept of where God wants to dwell, so to say, down here on earth as his dwelling place, as his home. So I found afterwards a beautiful, somebody brought down that that's really alluded to in the very first word of the Torah. The very first word of the Torah is Bereshit. In the middle section there are three letters, Resh, Ayin, Shin, which spell the word Rosh, which means at the head, like Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year. But on the outer letters, you have the Bet, the Yud, and the Tav, which spells the word Bayit. The house. God, so to say, Rosh, the head of everything, is already looking for a place to dwell inside a bayit down here on earth. Thought it was a very interesting take. And then the person took it further and said that it's not a coincidence that the numerical value of the word ta'ava, which is a desire, that God's desire is the same numerical value as bayit, the house. Because that is ultimately what God wants. God wants his presence recognized and acknowledged down here on earth. But let's talk tonight. We talked about the numerical value. We talked about the name. But tonight I want to focus on the form, the actual form of the letter. So I'm going to share the screen for a moment because I want you to see this. Let me pull up the right one here. Okay, hold on. Sorry. Here, screen, share. There, you got it? Everyone can see the form of the letters? Yeah, let me just make sure. We're right here. We're on the second letter here, Bet. Okay, that's the second letter. But if you notice, you'll see a couple of things. What you have is a, I don't know if you want to call it a backwards or a C, I don't know, however you want to describe it, but simply put, what you have is three lines, some thicker than others, but you have one line that goes across the top here. You have this one here, right? That's one. Then you have a second one, which is, comes down here, the horizontal, I'm sorry, the vertical. And then you have a third one. Down here is a third line. It's the connection of three lines. What some of the sages point out is that this is reminding us that that our world, remember, the letter Bet is all about duality, which is the symbol of our world, because only God is singular. Our world stands on three pillars. If you look at each one of these lines as a pillar, they stand on three pillars, the famous pillars of Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim. Torah, obviously, Torah study. Avodah is service to God, which can be translated as offerings in the temple or prayer service that we have today. And Gemilut Chasadim is acts of kindness in the interpersonal realm. You have all three. Somebody was suggesting that maybe that's why, it's clear, right? Maybe that's why the fourth side is open. It's reminiscent of Abraham's tent that was open for hospitality. The world in which we live, the three pillars, allows for us to find room to leave space open to allow others to join in. Okay? So that's just one in terms of the format. Now, we mentioned last time that this Bet, which is standing for duality, is the recognition that these three pillars within man are there to create a home or a house for God, but also to recognize that there is an open side, the evil, that can seep into our lives, that distance us from accomplishing our goals. So tonight I want to focus on the form. Can you see at the very top of this letter, there's a little bit of a, I'll call it a crown, but it's a little bit pointing upward. Can everyone see that? Right? I circled it at the top in the upper left, pointing towards the heaven. Typically, when we look at letters and we look at their form, towards the top of the letter represents the more spiritual side. The bottom of the letter represents more of the physical side. Okay, classic picture that we think of in our lives, of where we think of spirituality as upward, heaven as being up, and the earth down here, the physical, is below. Obviously, it's not limited to that, but that's the conceptual picture that we have in our mind. What you find, therefore, is that this letter bet really represents the flow of ideas being brought into reality of our world. If you really think about it, and I use the word purposely, think, a thought is not physical. Yes, it takes up space in your brain. Yes, there are neurons that are constantly doing their thing, but a thought is an intangible item. What happens is that you get this idea in your head. Where it came from, nobody's really sure, but this perhaps non-physical concept works its way into your brain and slowly works its way. So you have this thought, it works its way down here to the physical world and where it becomes a reality. Perhaps the form of the letter bet is reminding us that this is the idea of taking some idea, creating the flow into our world and the version in this world. But here's what's fascinating. If you look again, there's a little bit back here. It's hard to see, but the very corner, the bottom right corner of the letter actually works its way back towards the Aleph. Can you all see that? It's hard to see. I'll clear the drawing, but there's, I don't think there's a way for me to make this bigger. But it's not just like the letter C. Yeah, Sharon, that's great. Hold that up, Sharon. If you look at the bottom right corner of the letter, you'll see that it's not, it goes backwards. It's not like the letter C, even in block lettering, where it's just like a backwards parenthesis or a bracket. There's a little piece of it that goes away from the C. What we're told is as follows, is that every time we take an idea and we try to translate it, bring it down into our world, there is something unique, the twist that we put on it. It's not exactly a carbon copy of what that original thing was. For example, they tell the story about Rembrandt, who wanted to go ahead and paint. He had seen this most amazing sunset, and he said, I have to capture this. And he made this most beautiful, beautiful painting of a sunset. And somebody asked him and said, is that exactly what you saw that you tried to capture? And he said, no. And the fellow said, well, then that doesn't speak well of your greatness. Why can't you capture exactly what it is? He says, because the picture in my head is what I saw, but then when it gets translated, it becomes my picture. It's how I viewed it. Two people can see the exact same sunset, but they see it differently. That's that little leg at the very bottom of where it gets an idea gets translated down here. Just like a child may be the product of his or her parents, but it is not a carbon copy. I don't care if they look exactly the same. Their mannerisms may be the same, but they are not. They are, in fact, a product that has a unique look to it. So that's the first idea in terms of the form of the letter. However, I think to really appreciate this, we have to take it one step further. Let's take a step back and go back to Aleph. Aleph, we know, we described that really represents oneness. It just is. God is. God was, God is, God always will be. That oneness, it just is. When you talk about the letter bet and the number two, two by definition means some kind of connection or relationship. If you have just two items in a basket, they may be two extremely unrelated items, but there's one thing that they have in common. They're connected. They are related because they're both in the basket. These are the two items in the basket. So by definition, there's a relationship. There's a connection between the items. The number two, the letter bet, is this concept of connecting and relating with something else. In fact, the letter bet, when it's used in a word as a prefix, it means in or with. That's its definition. If I say, ani bacheder, I am in the room, that means I have a connection. There's a relationship between me and the room. Okay, right? You understand what I'm saying? The letter, the number two, is by its very essence, is expressing a connection and a relationship. That's why, as a preposition, the letter bet at the beginning of a word means in or with. The Torah starts with the letter bet, not with an aleph. Why? Because it's not a book about God. It's a book about connecting and relating to God. That's the beauty of this. This is not a book about God. There's no book that could be written that way. But rather, our Torah is the book that teaches us how to forge and connect with that relationship. Hence, it starts with that letter bet. Everything that we come across, there's so many things that are connections and relationships. Not all of them are positive. Many are, but many are not. For example, a marriage between two people is a connection and a relationship between those two people. Typically, it's positive. But even if that relationship sours, and there's, for whatever the reason, to get divorced, that does not change that there's a relationship. You still have it. In fact, we even refer to it as an ex-husband or an ex-wife. It's not just any man, any other woman on the street now. There is still a connection and relationship. You have to deal with it that they were once married, right? So it's still some form of a relationship. There are many examples, perhaps more examples of disconnectedness, two-ness, if you want, than connections. If you recall our concept, we are here on this world to do what? Our purpose is, remember the letter Aleph? You have the lower Yud and the upper Yud. The goal is to connect them, moving from the lower us, trying to connect to the upper spiritual world. What do we have in the middle? Blockages. We have all these different things that make it challenging so that we could overcome them. So it's not surprising, therefore, that you have many examples of two that are somewhat of a blockage that we need to overcome. The goal there is to connect back to God, and therefore you need to go over to overcome those hurdles and those disconnectedness. I'll give you an example. The first day of creation, that's an easy one. That's when God created light and darkness. What did he do on the second day? So the Torah tells us that on day two, God separated the upper waters and the lower waters. What exactly that means, a lot of conversations, but on a simple level, you have water. Water is a symbol of connectedness. Why do I say that? So first of all, if you've ever tried to take a drop of water and split it, in a matter of short time, they will work together and form the droplet once again. There's a certain attraction. Water wants to be connected with each other. It's a symbol of this. The fact that our entire world is really connected, all the continents in the world are really connected via water, because all the waters are connected. So in effect, the world is all connected. You have the idea, our bodies are mostly made up of water. It's a universal solvent because it connects with most things. Water is that symbol of connectedness. So what did God do on day two? He took that water that symbolizes connectedness and split it into an upper water and a lower water. Well, what does that mean? Well, it's the ability, like we said before, it's the ability to connect with that godliness, that spirituality, that upper level, despite being down here in the mundane physical level. The lower waters connecting, our job is to connect it back to the upper waters. Again, we come back to this principle over and over again of where God created an environment of our ability to utilize our free will to choose what I'm going to connect with and what I'm going to have a relationship with. If I choose, I can reach up high to connect with the upper waters, or I can be very happy down here in the lower waters and just fulfill my physical gratification. There's something unique about day two. Day two in creation is the only day where God does not say that it was good. There's no such expression on day two. At the end of each day of creation, God says, and it was good, except on day two. Why? Because of this concept that while it's true that it was necessary for free will to exist, God had to separate, so to say, spirituality and physicality and put man in that position of earning and choosing to be a part of that upper world of connecting to spirituality. However, the ramifications are of this is that it created the danger of eternally losing that connection and staying down here. So God did not say, and it was good, because it may not be in the end. Some people may choose to live down here only in the physical world and never have an opportunity or never choose the opportunity to connect to the uppers. Therefore, although it's a day that separated it to give us that ability for free will, it runs that danger. So if what I'm telling you is true, meaning that everything about the bet is learning to be able to use the idea from above and try to bring it down into our world and vice versa, living down here in our world, learning to reach up towards the upper waters, then we're left with one question. And that is that the bet should be facing the Aleph. Why is it facing away? Again, if you look at that, you'll note that the bet is facing away from the Aleph. If what I'm telling you is true, it would have made more sense that the bet and all that it signified should be turned around looking for the Aleph, connecting back to the source. Isn't that the goal? Rabbi, it was a great speech for 12 minutes, but you blew it. It's facing the wrong way. So I want to share with you something that I heard. We have to go through the story of Jacob's dream. Let's just refresh our memories. Jacob now has to run away from his twin brother Esau. Why? Because, quote unquote, he stole the blessings, he got the birthright, all the things that Esau holds against him. And Esau swears he's going to kill him. So Yaakov has to run away. So he's traveling, he's going to go to his uncle Lavan, he's going to go there. And what happens is that he falls asleep. He goes to sleep in a place. What is this place? So we're told that Yaakov lays down where ultimately this is the mountain or the hill upon which the temple will be built. It's also the place where Abraham was willing to bring up his son Isaac as his offering. It's that hill. It's that mountaintop where he lays down to sleep. What does he dream about? He has a dream about a ladder that connects, ding, 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 keyword, that connects heaven and earth. Yes, makes a lot of sense because, again, this is the spot on the physical world that is the ladder connecting upward. The lower water reaching the upper water. The lower leg of the Aleph reaching up to the upper leg of the Aleph. This is the spot on earth where heaven and earth touch. Hence, you have this ladder, beautiful symbol of connecting heaven and earth. But what happens on this ladder? So the Torah tells us that he dreams about angels that are going up and down on the ladder. Well, that begs a real question. Typically, where do you picture angels? You picture them up already. They're in the heavenly sphere. They're in the spiritual realm. Yaakov's dream, the Torah is very specific. It says that he envisioned on this ladder angels that were going up and then coming down. The order seems to be reversed. It doesn't seem to fit the pattern of what we always think about when it comes to angels. Aren't angels nothing more than God's messengers? They're the messengers to do God's bidding. Where would their starting point be? Would be in heaven, would be upwards. So in Jacob's dream, I would have expected him to dream about angels coming down and then going up. Yet that's not what he does. This is a very important point, folks. The example I'm going to give you is only an example. It's not a perfect analogy, but I hope it will at least serve its purpose. Where does rain come from? So Sharon's making a motion that it starts here and it falls down from heaven. However, Marissa is pointing downward and she's telling us that it really, the starting point is down here on earth. Because what you have is a body of water that, because of the sun, it evaporates, it goes upwards, forms all of the clouds and whatever happens up there, and then in return comes the rain back down to earth. The starting point is not upwards, but rather it starts down here. This is the example I want to use. Do not make the mistake of thinking that the direction of godliness, of the direction of God's influence, so to say, into our world, only starts at the top in heaven. That is not true. The real starting point is down here. Really? Where's that starting point? It starts with our decisions. When I make a free will choice to do a mitzvah, to do something positive, you know what that does? That causes a chain reaction, because that energy that I created by doing that mitzvah, that's like the water evaporating off the body of water down here. It goes heavenward, which then causes a chain reaction that causes goodness to flow back to our earth. The starting point is not heaven. The starting point is earth. Free will decision is the origin of all negative and positive energy being brought down to our earth. Yes, it works in the negative as well. If I choose to do something that's negative, whether it's going against God's precepts or whether I harm another person, which is also against God's precept, but any kind of negative free will decision impacts the chain reaction of what comes down to earth. This is really the understanding, and I wish we had more time to elaborate, but this is really the understanding when it says that God created mankind, B'Tselem Elokim, in the image of God. It doesn't mean in any physical term, because that makes no sense. God has no physical side. But what it means that God created us in his image, he allowed us the option to bring energy down to this earth the same way he does it. He gave us the ability to tap into the mechanism by which positive or negative energies are brought based on our decisions and actions. You can't get more godlike than that. That's what it means we were created in God's image. We were gifted this ability to emulate God in relation to utilizing that mechanism of bringing either positive or, God forbid, negative energy to this world. That's as godlike as anything can ever be. It would also make sense why the term is used, B'Tselem Elokim. Elokim is God's name, but why not B'Tselem Yud-Kei Vav-Kei? That's more use, you know, that's the more common name. Why Elokim? So we've said, if you recall, Elokim is really the name that is the mask, the buffer, the one that hides God. If you look in the first chapter of the Torah about creation, you will only see the name Elohim. Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning of God's creating. It doesn't say Yud and Hey and Vav Hey. It only uses the name Elohim in the entire first chapter. Why? Because again, our world is layer upon layer upon layer of that mask where God is hidden behind it. He gave us that ability. Elohim is the same numerical value as nature. Elohim is Hateva. Yeah, because it's the same thing. Elohim, or I should really say Elohim, is really the name that's used when God says, don't worship idols. It says, Lo yia lecha Elohim acherim. Why would God use the same name for himself as he would for a wooden statue? Because Elohim doesn't really mean God. It means a power or a perceived power, a position of authority. God is the ultimate, but there are so many things that seem to be in charge. And therefore, that's what idols are. Idols are man's way of kissing up to the mechanism and not recognizing what's behind the mask. Therefore, when God said that he created us, B'Tselem Elohim, he created us in his godly image, he uses the name Elohim specifically because it's allowing us to tap into that mechanism that allows us to have that effect in our world. So this is the second point. Number one is that Jacob has this dream about a ladder connecting heaven and earth. And number two, the angels are going up and then coming down. Yes, why? Because these angels are created by Yaakov's good deeds. These are what Yaakov represents. Where's the starting point? Down here on earth. Think of the blinds in your room or the blinds in your living room, whatever it is, and it's on this chain, this pulley, and you pull one side and it causes the chain, chain reaction, huh? Right? It causes that to bring open, close the shades. All you did is pull one side. Yeah, you did it, and that causes the reaction. That's how it works. But there's a third piece to this dream. Because ultimately, at the very end, he sees in the dream, I'll read you the phrase here in the Torah, V'hinei Hashem nitzav alav vayomar. Literally means, behold, God was standing over him. God was standing over him. What a weird expression. Why didn't it just say a vision? Remember, this is in a dream. Just say God appeared to him. What do you mean he was standing over him? Again, if you are a parent and you are so proud of your son, you put your son or your daughter up on your shoulders, right? So imagine what's it seem? So you have the kid on the parent's shoulder and everybody sees the kid but knows that it's the guy at the bottom who's carrying him. In a many, many ways, when we behave properly, we are wearing God on our shoulders. We are displaying godliness. It's as if he's sitting on our shoulders. And Yaakov in his dream sees God standing, so to say, on top of him. God is saying to Jacob, you're the one who's showing me to the world. I'm sitting on your shoulders. When people see you, Yaakov, they see you behaving a certain way, it's a reflection of me. Great job. When they see Yaakov, they see me. You ever hear the expression that the Jewish people are supposed to be a light unto the nations? What are we supposed to be, become flashlights? What does that mean? No. What it means is that if we live our life properly, others will see and it will cause them to think about God. You can't get better than that. That's what it's all about. For homework, if you want to see how this plays out, take a look at Pharaoh's dream with the story with Joseph. When he relates over his dream to Joseph, he uses a different expression regarding his relationship with the Nile River. I'll just throw that out there for your homework. Take a look there and see who's standing on top of whom. But okay. So what do we come to? Let's put this all back together again. The purpose of life is not just, let's talk about the Aleph again. I'll use my hands here, folks, watch. Remember, we had originally the Aleph. You had the upper Yud and the lower Yud, and you had your Vav blockage. And I kept telling you, the goal is to have your lower yud reach up and try to connect with the upper one. Correct? You with me? I'm changing that now because the bet teaches us something different. The bet is teaching us it's not enough for me just to be the one moving to go up to the heavenly realm. There's another part. I need to do things that are going to bring godliness closer to our world. And the two are going to keep meeting closer and closer and closer. This is really what happens. The purpose is life. The purpose of life is not just simple definition of good is that which connects you with God and evil is what distances you from God, but God is a constant up here. No, rather the goal, the goal is to generate godliness and bring it forward into this world. Free will decision causes godliness to move forward into our world. We initiate goodness, it brings godliness into our world. The bet is taking the Aleph from its realm and putting it into our world. It's taking the concept that what Aleph is all about of creating, trying to get a connection with that, but not sufficing it by saying, as long as I lift myself, I'm going to reach godliness. No, there's a second part. You have to bring godliness down into this world. Aleph was us moving closer or further away from God. The bet is where we're both moving closer or, God forbid, further away from each other. That's really what the bet is. And that's why the letter form is not facing the Aleph. Because it's not going back to the Aleph. In effect, it's trying to take the concept of Aleph and move it forward into the rest of our world. Hence, the bet faces forward, not back to the Aleph. It's a heavy concept, but I think it's one that if you think about it, it really makes a lot of sense. If everything about the bet is all about duality, it's all about the world, the universe in which we live, of where the goal is to be able to connect to godliness, which is what it's all about. The bet shows us that it's not just my moving closer to God, but it's bringing God closer to me down here in this world, setting the example of godliness and spirituality in the world. Let me open it to questions. If there are, maybe not. Great. No question. Oh, couldn't get away.
No, it's not a question. It was from last Thursday. You were going to have a sheet with the numbers and numerical values or something.
Yeah, I got you. I got it here. Hold on.
I mean, either that or you could just email or whatever.
No, but one second. Hold on.
So it's not a question. I just didn't get
it. Hold on. It's here. Here it is. Where'd it go? Here it is. Go away. Too many things opening. Wait. Here it is. Okay. So now let me share my screen. This is it. Yeah. Okay.
So is there a way to, like, we can print that or something? Yeah, I guess I can print it from here. I don't know.
You can probably just Google Gematria and it'll probably come up.
Okay.
Do you see it though? Aleph is one, bet is two, gimel three, all the way down. I don't know. Is there a way to send the file?
If you attach it to an email to the group.
And you can put in the chat a link if it's on a website.
Files. Hold on, files. I know. It's only going to put it in a
I believe it's available under on Wikipedia.
Oh, there you go.
I'll post the link in a second.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's pretty standard. I mean, most places will have this kind of format.
You could do a print screen and then put it in a Word document.
And then do what? Oh, you mean that each one of you can do that? Okay. Yeah.
Right now. If somebody wanted it, you capture it right now.
Function, print, screen, paint, paste.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but okay.
Okay, let's see.
I don't think that's going to work for me.
it's not working.
Green.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
I'm trying everything. No.
Wikipedia. Okay, I just did.
Google is your friend. GEMATRIA.
There you go.
Okay, that's fine. We can look it up. I just wanted to have that for the future.
All right.
Thank you.
Fine. All right. Any other questions? We good?
No, here's somebody who's someone.
Perfect. All right.
Thank you.
You want to grab my tea?
Yeah, 1 second. Randy, what you got?
Could it be said that in the bet, the top line are concepts and ideas, and the bottom line are our actions?
Our actions? Yes. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's one thing to have an idea or an intent to do something, but then you have to actually carry it out.
Correct.
Through an action.
And that's why you have the connecting vertical line.
Right.
Otherwise, you just have thought and an action that are disconnected. Good. I like that.
Real quick.
Yeah, Monroe.
Bet is house, but if you pronounce it like vet, that word itself, does vet mean it's something other than
it wouldn't change it. It wouldn't change it. No.
It doesn't.
No. I can't say for sure. My grammar is I won't tell you what grade I got in grammar in school. It wasn't a high mark. So I can't say for sure, but I don't know of too many words that actually start with the vet sound. If it's at the beginning of a word, I believe the general rule is it has to have the dot to turn it into a bet.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if there are many words that actually start without it.
Okay.
But that's a grammar.
Rabbi, in the bottom horizontal, there's that little hook.
Going backwards.
Going backward. Is that to bring the aleph along?
I think so, yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. In the two examples I gave, it either is connecting back to the aleph and dragging it forward, or it represents the unique aspect of taking the idea down to a reality and putting my little something on it. It's not because otherwise the top line and the bottom line would be parallel exactly, the original and the copy. But that's not how it works. There's always something original of how it gets translated by one of us.
I like that.
Sharon.
Quick thing. I just happened when Monroe mentioned what he asked. So if say we have bet and beth, so Ashkenazic and Sephardic, is the meaning of the letter the same?
Yes, the meaning is the same. It doesn't change the meaning of the word.
Whether
you pronounce it as bayit or bait, it still means house.
Okay.
All right.
Good connection worked. I just printed that whole thing off.
There you go. Great.
Thank you.
Great job, everybody.
Thank you. Till tomorrow.
Have a great night, everyone.
Have a good night.
All right.
Bye. Bye.